present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
And welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website, read by Susan Ray.
Shares in the funeral firm Dignity have fallen by 50% following a profit warning and some stiff competition.
Our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Angela Barnes. And opposite them on my left, Fern Brady and Andrew Maxwell. Andy, who's brought down all the president's men?
So, there I am, sitting at home, minding my own business, watching TV, when the phone rings. And it's Miles. And he says, Andy, do you fancy coming to a dinner at the President's Club? at the Dorchester. And I said, well, why aren't you taking Mrs. Jupp? And he says, it's men only. And I said, ooh, that's anachronistic in this day and age. But will the event be full of rich establishment figures who wield undue influence? And he says, yeah. So I say, yeah, I'm in. And we and we go along, and I have to be honest and say, almost from the moment we got there, if I'm honest, we had a bad feeling about it. And not just because David Walliams was comparing. because almost at the outset, the organisers trooped in 130 young women in skimpy black dresses and paraded them across the stage. And at that point, Miles and I felt distinctly uncomfortable and left. And that is the statement I've given to BBC Media. Now, before any listeners who are desperate to be outraged get going, can I just say, obviously, I made all that up. In a desperate attempt to lighten the tone on what is a very dark and troubling story, namely the story of a charity event that turned into a meat market. I mean, there's so many aspects to this story, but the one that particularly caught my eye was the way the word hostess is being used in the media. It makes me wonder, why in this day and age, 2018 or whatever year it is, they keep changing it. Why is hostess even a job anymore? I mean, nobody actually needs a young woman in a short dress to come sit at their table and top up their wine and make them feel generally important. That's like a job from a bygone age. That should be like a sort of town crier or a plague pit attendant.
It was a black tie event. You know, there's nothing worse than a badly dressed perv, is there? That's.
I have a sort of a political take on this one.
Oh, yes.
Right? The newspaper that brought the story to attention was the FT, Financial Times, who were very much Remain. The politician who got caught in the situation was Nadeem Sahawi, who's a Tory MP who's very much Leave. And he's now in trouble for it. It seems to be a situation where a Remain MP gets in trouble, Tory MP, the next one's Leave, the next one's Remain. Because it's now Zahawi, but the last one was Damien Green, he was Remain, and the one before that was Priti Patel, she was Leave. Right. I don't personally believe, all of a sudden, out of the blue, the British journalistic class now give a toss about waitresses getting patted on the caboose. Yeah? I think it's a lot more to do with Brexit.
Andrew, are you suggesting the British press have an ulterior motive?
Madness, I know.
People saying that the hostesses knew what they were getting into. No, they didn't. Like, I used to be a temp in London, and I worked for two of the people on this guest list, but I signed non-disclosure agreements, so I just want to say what great guys they were to work for. And it was honestly like being in Mad Men, just working as a receptionist for these people. There was one place I worked where they talked to me like I was an idiot, and there was a laminated guide to making the tea for each of the six directors. And it was like, one wanted it from the kettle, not the boiler. One wanted it from the boiler, not the kettle, with a chocolate biscuit on the side at all times. Long story short, if you're listening and I worked as your secretary, I snotted in your tea.
It's a weird world that the corporate event that most people don't know, that most of us comedians and entertainers do corporate events. Mm-hmm. They're individually weird occasions in themselves. I once did one for the biscuit industry, right? Me and 10 biscuit executives, the big wigs from the biscuit game. I got to the end of the gig and I was going, listen, you've been fantastic. I was kind of dreading the gig. But before I go, you're in the biscuit industry. Can I ask you a question about the biscuit industry that I've always wanted to ask? And they were like, yeah, ask us anything. This is as far as I got before the whole thing went absolutely berserk. This is all I said. Wagon wheels. Yeah, but do you remember when you were a kid? Your hands were smaller!
I did an after dinner at the Duke of Edinburgh's Polo Club. Yeah, in what can only be described as a spectacular piece of misbooking. I can only imagine at the same time Sir Stephen Redgrave was getting booed off stage at the Funny Bucket in Croydon. Like, I'm no...
This is the Financial Times expose of the President's Club. A number of hostesses say they were groped, sexually harassed, and propositioned by guests at a charity fundraiser described as a very sexy, elite, men-only event. Guests included Conservative Minister Nadeem Zahawi, who was later given a dressing down by Chief Whip Julian Smith in what was, one imagines, a very sexy, elite, men-only event. Zahawi said he left immediately after discovering what kind of event it was, rather than getting in too deep, like that time he joined the Conservatives. Up for grabs in the charity auction was the opportunity to give your wife plastic surgery, with hidden camera footage showing the auctioneer saying, your missus could look like this, before presumably showing a picture of your happily divorced wife raising your children with someone else. Guests were entertained by burlesque dancers wearing star-shaped stickers over their nipples. I'm just delighted that someone else has star-shaped nipples. 2 points to Andy. Angela, who's having a summit at the summit?
So, this week, it's the World Economic Forum in Davos. I must make sure... I always want to say Davros. I don't know about anyone else, but I... and that's, if you don't know what it is, it's where the... it's a meeting of sort of the world's elite and Piers Morgan. and they go to this remote mountain retreat in Switzerland. It's like a big self-help group with the emphasis really on helping themselves. And... Donald Trump arrived at Davos for the forum, and it's the first time a sitting president has been to the World Economic Forum since Bill Clinton in 2000, which does make me think it's somewhere they tend to go when they're about to be impeached. yeah. I feel sorry for America at the moment, because it must be every time he goes to a sort of world forum, it's that feeling I used to get when my dad used to go to my school parents' evening. You know, it's like, oh, God, you're going to give a really bad impression of me. That, like, my dad was a type 1 diabetic, right, and he had hypodermic needles, and it's genuinely true. When I was 14, he turned up at my parents' evening with one of his needles, gave it to my teacher and said, I found this in Angela's bag, what could it mean? Because he thought it was funny. yeah. What it means, 4 sessions with an educational psychologist. That's what it means.
That is quite funny, though, be fair.
No, don't
that is quite funny. They were worried that, because they've had a lot of snow, and they were worried that Trump's helicopters might trigger an avalanche and they might all die in some huge metaphor.
Apparently, Davos isn't that far away from where the Dignitas clinic is.
All right.
Now, I'm not making any suggestions, you know, a couple of, you know, slightly turned around road signs, maybe. But I don't know.
Or just raffle prizes.
Yeah.
But I wish they'd start referring to our relationship with America as, like, the special special relationship. See if someone came up to you in the street and said, I would like to have a special relationship, you'd phone the police.
Andrew, you've presumably done a gig at Davos or been invited to... been invited to speak after some sort of drunken evening.
Yeah. In favour of the global elite meeting each other, I don't think that's necessarily creepy. I mean, when they didn't meet each other, we ended up with the First World War. So it's good that they actually meet face-to-face and break down a certain amount of barriers. But seeing as how they're the people who have benefited the most from globalisation, they should really have to meet in cities and places that haven't done well. I want to see every year a different place. Here we go. You're in Pontypridd. Yeah. Next year, you're in Wrexham.
Are they all in Wales?
How well do you think Theresa May is doing at Davos? Do you think she's having a nice time?
Oh, she's playing a blinder, isn't she? She's a bloody good egg. God, this country's lucky to have her at the tiller. Oh, gosh, she's a bloody good egg, isn't she? Holding it together. Oh. Ooh, one day she'll be on the side of a coin. She's an absolute legend. A hero.
Well, this is all very moving to hear.
She did. I mean, the way they're spinning it is that Trump apparently told Theresa May that she reminded him of Winston Churchill. He didn't specify which bit of Churchill's career she reminded him of. It might be Gallipoli, I think.
This is the World Economic Forum in the Swiss ski resort of Davos, attended by a number of world leaders, including Theresa May and Donald Trump. The last time they met, Trump held Theresa May's hand as they walked down a ramp at the White House, sparking rumours that the president is scared of slopes. So to invite him to a summit on a ski resort is an act of cruelty, nothing short of absolutely hilarious. Theresa May will be making a speech about the importance of combating extremism on social media, so there's a good moment for all the other economic leaders to go to the beer tent. Like when Paul McCartney says, here's one off the new album. The title of this year's Davos Forum is Creating a Shared Future in a Fractured World, a bit of a change from last year's, which was Enchantment Under the Sea. 2 points to Angela. Fern, why is making unwanted statements bad for your health?
Well, Boris Johnson has been slapped down by Theresa May because he demanded something like £5 billion for the NHS. The reason he's doing this is because he's lining himself up to be the saviour of the NHS to make himself more popular, because when Jeremy Hunt is inevitably run over by an ambulance, he wants to step in. But see if you think the NHS is stretched now. Wait till Boris has it thrown all its resources into finding a cure for webbed feet and eating graduates.
I think the thing at the moment with Boris, he's got into a lot of trouble essentially because there's strict confidentiality about what goes on in Cabinet, mainly so the rest of us don't find out that they do the whole thing nude.
I'm glad our Foreign Secretary is interfering in health, because it must mean that all our relationships with other countries are solved, so... Yeah.
you can't get in trouble. It's impossible. He was got in trouble. How the media covered it was, one by one, in the Cabinet meeting, each Cabinet member took turns to, and I quote, admonish him. Ooh! That's some rough stuff, isn't it? Boris screws up, the more he gets promoted. Ooh, I'd like to admonish him. Well, how they should deal with Alexander, Al, because that's his real name, which everybody knows him, calls him Al, and Boris is literally just a fiction, a character that he's tacked on. How he should be dealt with, he should be taken to the corner of the room and his chair should be pointing the wall. He's a very spoiled little boy in the body of a fat man in his 50s.
You're right. I mean, he does tell lies because he's a liar. And, no, that's not meant as a criticism. No, that's a statement of fact.
It's part of his skill set.
Exactly. We're talking about a man who's twice been fired for lying. Once... coincidentally enough, to the leader of the Conservative Party, so I'm not breaking an exclusive there.
Michael Gove supported him, didn't he? Came out and said that he supported him. And it reminds me of that old saying, you know, there's only one thing worse than no one supporting you, and that is Michael Gove supporting you.
This is the slapdown administered to Boris Johnson this week in Cabinet after he put forward his own plan to earmark any future Brexit dividend for the NHS. People were surprised that Johnson spoke out so vigorously about the NHS, but it has to be said he's always been an extremely keen and vocal supporter of keeping Boris Johnson in the news.
Dude, so, by the way, he is in the news today, but because...
That's why we're... talking about him. I don't wish to reveal the inner workings of the show, what's behind the magic curtain, but one of the things that links all that we're discussing, Andy, is they're things that have recently been in the news. It's not a series of... God, that's funny. I was reading about this in the paper as well, and I'm like... Hang on a minute. Almost every round's built around a news story. Sorry, Andrew, I've interrupted unfairly, I'm sure.
He's in the news because they found a mummy in Switzerland, which is a 200-year-old mummy, and they always thought it was a mystery who this woman was. And it turns out it's his great, Boris Johnson's great, 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 great grandmother is this mummy. And she died of syphilis. I'm not joking you.
Given what a publicity seeker Boris is, do we think that it's beyond him to find a corpse? Wrap it up in kind of... bandages, secrete it into Basel, give it syphilis somehow through some process. I can't quite work out how he would do that. But
I think that sounds perfectly plausible, Andy. And I think if you were a lawyer at the BBC right now, you're probably Googling the phrase "giving syphilis to a corpse" and thinking. I think we can probably get away with that. That seems a fairly... to speculate that someone looks like the sort of person that could give an STD to a corpse. Yeah, I think that's... It doesn't really reflect on his character, does it?
I'm sure we've done that gag before. I think we did that about James Callaghan. I'm quietly confident.
It's one of those stories that keeps coming round, isn't it? So now, despite you all talking about corpses, I'm going to just read some jokes out about sort of an unrelated topic that I think we touched on some minutes ago. Just think back to where we were. We were talking about Boris Johnson, we were talking about the Cabinet, we were talking about confidentiality. It was, in many ways, a more innocent time. Cabinet meetings are supposed to be confidential. It's one of these strict Cabinet rules, like no gouging, and if someone goes limp, you stop. Theresa May said that all financial decisions will be deferred until the spending review next year, and until then we'll just keep ringing up China in the last week of every month, begging for enough cash to keep the Queen running. 2 points to Fern. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Angela have 4, but Fern and Andrew have 5. We start round two with a cutting from the Formby Bubble, reporting on a winter solstice celebration.
Susie Price, celebrated Formby percussionist, started the celebration with a blast on a conch shell, immediately followed by the resonance of her pair of muffled giant gongs.
Our thanks to John Guyver in Southport for sending us that. Andrew, who's thinking up a Celtic crossing?
This is because Boris Johnson came up with the whizzer idea the other day of that there should be a bridge across the English Channel. So off the back of that, the DUP in Northern Ireland have now mooted the idea of building a bridge between Northern Ireland and Scotland. Right? Because presently you've got to get a ferry from Larne in Northern Ireland to Stranraer in Scotland. And the DUP have somehow upset the Daily Mail, although they share the exact same politics. The Daily Mail is furious at the DUP. This is, like, they don't care what the Daily Mail thinks or anybody on this island thinks. They know that the Tory government need them. Every single politician in Northern Ireland of all stamps, each one of them has had a very credible death threat. They are not worried about a strongly worded column in the Daily Mail. The DUP know full well that they have the British government over a barrel. And if you think 1 billion's enough, sunshine, it most certainly is not. So we've made a wee list here. We want a wee bridge for 20 billion. And that bridge will get built. And you think that'll be the end of it? No chance. Now we want the largest building in the world built in Lisburn. You see that wee shard you got in London? We want a shard, but three times the size and entirely made out of pallets.
I think we should say to them, you can have your bridge from Northern Ireland to Scotland as long as halfway across it you build an abortion clinic and a same-sex marriage chapel.
Do you think there should be a tunnel as well as the bridge? Do you think people should... There's just not enough options.
They can't do a tunnel because buried in undersea mines between Northern Ireland and the west of Scotland is a huge munitions dump from the Second World War.
It's chemical weapons.
Yeah, really? It's a massive dump. That's the reason they can't. It's only 12 miles across. A tunnel would make more sense.
A lot of live ordnance, that might speed the tunnelling up.
And what's the sort of purpose of the... They want to create a Celtic powerhouse, a sort of second Enya.
Enya compilation. The nice thing about the DUP wanting a bridge is it's nice to know that they believe in science when it comes to civil engineering.
I mean, the only risk for the Irish that I can see with the bridge is that snakes could slither across it. That could undo a lot of St Patrick's good work.
This is the plan to build a £15 billion bridge between Northern Ireland and Scotland with the backing of the Democratic Unionist Party. The proposed bridge would have two lanes, allowing people to flee in both directions. I mean, it sounds ambitious, but people used to think the Channel Tunnel was crazy pie-in-the-sky nonsense, and now look at us, smuggling people on the underside of articulated lorries without a care in the world. Of course, one has to remember that the most effective bridge one could build for the DUP would be one between their view of the world and reality. 2 points to Andrew. Fern, have a listen to this.
Steak place. The steak place.
Fern, who's made a mistake?
This is Weatherspoons, who have unwittingly forced lots of angry customers into Veganuary, or is it Vejanuary? I don't know how to say it. Weatherspoons couldn't do their usual steak night because of a delay with meat suppliers. And former Big Brother contestant Ellie Young tweeted sad and tearful emojis after saying she went to Weatherspoons for the steak club only to discover they had no steaks. Like, am I living some sort of rarefied existence that I think this is pathetic?
Well, it's caused a tremendous amount of hurt and upset. It's
a national institution, Weatherspoons. What were we going to do with those churches otherwise?
It's a problem with the meat. It's at the processing plant, isn't it? There's a problem
Russell Hume.
What I want to know, 90,000 steaks apparently went to waste. 90,000 steaks Weatherspoons couldn't sell. And I want to know what happened to those steaks, right? I reckon out there somewhere there's 90,000 Labradors who think they've been a very good boy.
Clearly there is going to be, there's more to come out, and I know what will happen. It will trigger a lot of secret camera exposés of what goes on in the meat industry. And when it comes to the meat industry, I personally am a big fan of ignorance. You know, I really don't want to know that the mince I am eating is mechanically recovered vulture vomit or whatever.
One of my mates back home, he knows a guy called James Bond, real name. He's a real man, his name's James Bond, and he works in a slaughterhouse. He literally has a license to kill. Oh, I love a good Spoons, man.
Yeah, I love a good Spoons.
It's a fantastic... My local Spoons is a former Baptist chapel. Beautiful architecture. And there's a balcony section up there. That's where we sit. And on the weekend, you can see people fight beneath you. Right? They're fighting away downstairs on the ground floor where the congregants were. But you're up in the choir,
Sort of like the Colosseum.
Yeah, absolutely. And they can't get up to you because drunks can't fight upstairs.
I quite like a Spoons. We went to our local one not long ago, and we got there. There were bouncers outside, and we thought, oh, there's bouncers. Maybe that means it's going to be... Anyway, so we went inside, and when I got there, the bouncer went, oi, mate, come over. I thought, oh, what's he going to say? He goes, those tables there, right under the air conditioning, very cold. I thought, I think this will be a gentle evening. And indeed, it was.
I did Christmas dinner in a Spoons. It was fantastic.
Did you eat the steak?
I didn't have steak. I don't like steak anyway.
So this doesn't affect you?
This doesn't affect me in the slightest.
Well, no wonder you're being so sort of blasé about the whole thing.
Absolutely, it's just one of those issues. Like, you know, hand glider safety. I don't care, I'm not doing it.
This is an unexpected recall of meat supplied by the company Russell Hume, which, as well as affecting Jamie's Italian, caused all branches of the Wetherspoons pub chain to drop steaks from their menu on steak night. Head of Wetherspoons and prominent Brexit supporter Tim Martin has blamed the supply shortage on all of these foreign cows not coming over here. Steak night at Wetherspoons is, of course, traditionally followed by bowel regret morning. 2 points to Fern. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Andy?
This is from Mr. Will Westbury, and he received an email at the end of the last year with the following subject line. Don't forget to include your pet in your Thanksgiving feast.
Fern?
This is from Dr. Deborah Enzenbacher, who saw this sign in the Sultan Qaboos University Hospital in Oman. Urology open day. 17th of January from 9 a.m. Meet outside by the fountains.
Angela.
This is from Terry Robinson in Stroud, and he sent us a listing from the Channel 4 schedule on Thursday, the 25th of January. 11:30 p.m. The super orgasm, followed at 12:30 by obsessive compulsive cleaners.
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Fern and Andrew have 9, but this week's winners are Andy and Angela with 10. Before we leave you, here is an advert sent out by the China-Britain Business Council, spotted by Rosemary Fraser.
Winners of the China-Scotland Business Awards will be announced at the Grand Central Hotel in Glasgow on Thursday next week as part of a Chinese burn supper.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Angela Barnes, Fern Brady and Andrew Maxwell. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by John Hunter, James Kettle and Jenny LaVille, with additional material by Laura Major and Glenn Moore. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.